Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, thanks for downloading Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring. If you enjoy this free audio, you can keep the project going by helping us by downloading a video version of this show from gofasterstripe.com. You can buy either one episode individually for £3.50 or you get the whole series. I think there'll be 7 in this series for £15. All that money will go towards funding future comedy projects. So please do that if you can, or if you can't, just tell your friends about this podcast and hopefully they'll pay us some money. Or you can do other things like buy merchandise at Go Faster Stripe, whatever you like. Anyway, whatever, sit back and listen to another excellent Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Where does he get his ideas from? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just eaten a whole large pack of giant chocolate buttons all on his own. It's Richard Herring! Thank you. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahel Estepach. Wow, lots of cool people in tonight. It's a packed house tonight. Very excited. We've got a couple of podcasts we're going to do. Oh, no, pretending the second one's from next week. That's what we do. I just ate a whole big, you know, like the giant chocolate buttons, because that's more grown up in it than the little pathetic ones. You can pretend you're still a child, right? Because you're going to go, oh, look how big it is. Is still the right size for my tiny hand? And I have a problem with chocolate. I do like eating chocolate. And it was 65p for a regular size pack of chocolate ones, but it was a pound for a big one. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just buy the big one and make that last. It's like I don't know myself. I have never done that, so I just ate them. I ate them all to the extent that I was 3/4 of the way through and was feeling sick, and I was still eating the rest of them. So if I do throw up during the podcast, I apologise. We are back with the executioner is back, because it's making a noise this week, which we tried this out. I'll tell the people at home, the best name that people came up for this was the Venus Williams flytrap. Bang. Yeah, see, it gets a laugh. Even they've all heard that joke before in the studio. They still, that's how nice they are. They pretended to join in. I can film them. I'm sorry, my filming has been weak. Because it's because I'm trying to do it with one hand. But there, look, there's the butlers. See, now that's it. That's how I've got to get. I'm just practicing this for myself. This is a new lady. What's your name? Antonia. It's very sophisticated. I mean, more sophisticated than I thought, looking at you, I have to say. So the people at home will know what I mean. What do you do for a living, Antonia? Fucking hell, that's good. At the moment, she's retraining to be a death services interpreter. So I mean, they're deaf, like, rather than death. Like, can't hear, rather than services for the dead. I would quite like that. Little, you could do a little sex service wanking off dead people. No, sorry, that's just a different... I had a guy in my show this week who was deaf, and he we're all going to die, and he lip read the entire show, which I thought was quite impressive because I talk at quite a speed, and I kept on doing it. If I'd known he was there, but I did think, mate, he said he really enjoyed the show, but I thought at the end of it he might just have made up his own jokes. That is brilliant. It's like he's seen my life and written up. It was very good. Oh, that's a nice job to do. Retraining to do that. Does that mean you trained to do it once and weren't very good?
Deaf services before, now
trying with deaf. Now you did deaf first and now you're trying with deaf. Yeah, it's good. I'll do the funnies. I'll be the Lempopic of this relationship. What did you do before, Antonio? You worked for social services. No, it's nicer working for deaf services. Is it? I don't know. They're both quite worthy jobs. Worthy than what I do. I'm a wastrel. It's difficult to do topical material because we're recording these quite a long time in advance for the people at home. But someone else has tried to break into Buckingham Palace on the day we recorded this. It says happening. Is it? Why are you going like that? Was it you? Why were you pointing at the butler and going, well, hey, why was that about? You don't know. You were all cocky a minute ago, weren't you, when this camera wasn't on you? Now you've shut up. You work at Buckingham Palace, do you? What do you do? You're a butler. Fucking hell, there's another. She's a butler. No, so there we go. She's a butler, he's a butler, and you're a butler as well. How many butler? Are you a butler? Are you a butler? So the butler's cut off. That's the butler cut off. What do you do? You work in IT, yeah, that's why. You work in IT as well, right? Yeah. So really, you two, you're quite annoyed that these three came in, broke up the IT front row with their butling. No one has ever caught me, but I got into Buckingham Palace, and this is genuinely true, that obviously Michael Fagan got into Buckingham Palace, wanked in the Queen's ear, didn't he? That's what he did. No one knows. You know about that because you work there. That'll speak, go round, wank, you got on the old... No, you can't say... You're not allowed to say, because it's the official secrets, but you know that has got on the end of a bed, a little wank in her ear. That's what happened. That's the story. That other bloke got in, didn't he? The comedy terrorist. That was in Windsor, but he got into... Yeah, you know. But I got into Buckingham Palace in 1990 as I was writing for... this is completely true. I was writing for the Macmillan Encyclopedia of the Royal Family, which was a short... Unfortunately, didn't do very well because it came out sort of basically at the point where the Royal Family disintegrated, and so it was wrong the minute it was published. They'd sent me along to Buckingham Palace to get a pass to go into Buckingham Palace, so I could use their library, which turned out to be quite shit. I did use a toilet in there, which did have a sign on it saying the Royal Flush, which I thought was quite amusing. Have you used that toilet? No, okay. Are you allowed to go to the toilet? You're not allowed. So you've got to hold it in until the end of the... No wonder you're looking so... Whatever. But I also, at the time, I was using a camera case as my briefcase. I'd won a camera case in an Empire magazine competition. So I had this big silver case, and it was the day that all the world leaders were going to be at Buckingham Palace. George Bush, the first one, the marginally less stupid one, and all the other world leaders were going to be there. And I walked in, they said, you've got to go around the side and come in the other side. And I thought they meant go in front. So I went along the front of Buckingham Palace and then into the central courtyard of Buckingham Palace. Passed a bloke with a machine gun. Just didn't say anything, just let me go past. Got into the centre of Buckingham Palace, thought, this probably isn't right, is it? But I could have just gone in, gone to see if I could meet my, Prince Edward. I'd like to meet him, see what he was up to. And he was young, free and single in those days. And gay. In those days, he was gay. Now he's heterosexual, which is good. So I came out, and then I went to the guards, and none of the guards were doing anything. And I knocked on the guardroom door and said, I'm lost. And then they all laughed at me as if I'd fucked. They'd let me into Buckingham Palace with a massive bomb, but no one ever caught me. I could have wanked in the Queen's ear. I could have been the new Michael Fagan. Anyway, that is a true story based on something that happened in the news some time ago. If you are watching this at home, thank you for buying the DVD. Right, let's start with the video. Let's get on with our first guest tonight, or our only guest if you're watching this podcast. He is probably the tallest guest we've had so far. We've had some quite tall people. He is best known for appearing in the panel show Don't Feed the Gondolas. That is what you're... Yeah, that's what most people will know him for here tonight. Will you please welcome Dara O'Brien, ladies and gentlemen? There he is. Welcome. He is tall. There's a microphone there. You can talk to that, talking to that. You have to pick that up because otherwise we won't hear you. But, you know, we can do mime. Yeah, that's all right, cool. There we go.
Lovely, how's that? Is that better?
That's lovely, we can hear you. How are you doing?
And also delighted that you went that far back in my catalogue.
I did.
To find the thing for which I'm best known. I'm really proud. And they got a cheer from the one Irish person in the audience who remembers John Feeling Gondolas.
Do you remember the first time I met you?
Yes, I remember.
The first thing you said.
I remember this, Richard. And in fact, if you hadn't brought this up, I was going to bring it up. Because it would make you feel uncomfortable like it is right now.
It is going to.
Tell the people what you said about me online.
I can't remember. I tried to find it today, but it was in my... before I wrote my blog that I've done for 11 years, I did do a very short run tour diary of a Lee and Herring tour. I think this is where it was in about 98.
I was just sort of talking about...
And I became a little bit obsessed with Don't Feed the Gondolas.
Don't Feed the Gondolas is an Irish panel show, which was made around the mid-90s, and it was, you know, made by about six lads and for no budget and thrown together, and it looked really, really weird, and it worked sometimes and sometimes it didn't, and it delivered some things that in Ireland I still remembered quite fond. There's Monica Lully from Ahascraw, this character that would do phone-ins at the end, and so the things people liked, but it wasn't, like, the highest level of stuff, right? And you, like a bully, in this new online world. How I found this, like, whatever, because this is pre-Google, pre-Google alert, but nonetheless I found your scathing commentary written in HTML 1.1, right? So, really clunking thing that downloaded incredibly slowly. So the insults just slowly fill the script. You just, like, scroll into play line by line. Like the Vidi printer on the old results service. Your scathing review of it would slowly, character by character, be presented to me across, and I'm waiting for the twist where he goes, but for all of this it has its own charm, and that never arrived.
Because it was weird, because you didn't, I sort of didn't think that writing a little, a little diary on the internet, you sort of forgot that people might actually see it. I never dreamt you would see it.
The internet is written in ink. We have learned nothing from the film The Social Network. We have learned that from that
book. This was 1998, before anyone was really on the internet, so I was surprised. And I think I just, it was me, writing about what happened on tour, and a lot of what happened on tour is I got drunk, ate curries, and then watched late night TV in the hotel room because I'd failed to have sex with any women, and then this was on at 2 o'clock in the morning on some cable
this is
channel.
Too much of a mountain for us to climb to turn around that mood. that you post sad wank mood. It's some low rent hotel. You're mourning the death of your double act, and you're sitting there. Going, this is so awful. And then we, who are trying to make it, you actually went on about, I have a noticeable verbal tic, which I would like, this bit where I go, right? Which is because I was bullied savagely for many years, and it became a coping mechanism. And so it hasn't. Fuck that. I'd like that to suddenly seep out to everybody who's built a drinking game around it, or who commented on it. Like, it's a poor attention-containing thing, right? Would you comment on that at some length?
I did,
And then...
I do it all the time as well. That's the delicious irony.
Yes,
I didn't realise.
It is, but not in print. No. But it would have eaten up even more of the massive memory space of my 1998 PC. But I emailed you, didn't I?
Well, I met you. I remember meeting you in the Pleasance Dome. I think it must have been in 2000.
I had already emailed you. There were contact details, and I sent you... I chose the words to be as humble and well-meaning to make you feel as shit as possible about the review. Oh man, I said, that's a pity because I'm like a huge fan of yours. But you know, we do our best and we hope some people like it. But we're humble about our little efforts. But you keep going big BBC star with your work and real keeping grist to your... That was the gist of it. Right?
It was rubbish though. I think you might have had the last laugh.
Yeah.
Just about. This once happened to me with... I don't often get invited to stuff, and I got invited to The Simpsons, the movie of The Simpsons, a premiere, and I was very excited about that. That's amazing. I've been invited to the... I love that show, and it's, you know, have they invited me? And then it was out somewhere. It's like in the O2, I think, and they had like about 20 cinemas there, and they were all doing the preview. They were all doing the premiere, so it was like thousands and thousands of people had been invited. And then I said, well, maybe still, you know, Matt Groening or someone will be there. And either Joel or JK from JK and Joel. I don't even know which one. I think Joel.
History doesn't record what Joel or JK
were. Radio 1, even at the time, at the height, were not very successful Radio 1 double act DJs. He came on to introduce the Simpsons movie, and then I wrote a blog about how pissed off I was about that. I was thinking, at least I could have had someone dressed up as Lisa in a big costume. That would have been better.
Waving at the start of the film.
And then Joel, let's say it was Joel, he then emailed me to say, oh, thanks for that. That's great. Thanks for taking the piss out of me on your blog. I'm a big fan of yours. I don't think he was. I think Joel had Googled himself. And found it.
I can't be blamed for that. I think of that them. I may have met them or another double act coming out of a radio station in London recently. And I said, oh, how's that going? I said, man, it's new owners in there, and they are cutting the place. We're all going in, and we've all been given our cards, right? And I said, oh my God, it's terrible. And then they walked on, and I met somebody else. Said, yeah, only those who've been fired.
It's a kind of short-sighted lie, really. They're going to probably tune into the radio station.
They might have done a big solidarity, lads. We'll see you down in the Crown and Anchor, and you know, we'll have a drink about the good old days in this place before the corporate suits ruined it. Yeah, Joe K. We'll see you in a minute, all right? But I got to go on air for the next 10 years first.
So today you were tweeting about a website called Dirty Britcom Confessions.
Yes. Somebody sent me a link to it last night.
Which is a slightly odd website in which people reveal their fantasies about comedians.
About comedians.
Their sexual fantasies.
Their sexual fantasies. They're sometimes quite brutal sexual fantasies about comedians, and you wouldn't expect it. both the nature of the fantasies and some of the comedians who get name-checked. Obviously, Jack Whitehall's of the world, I get that. You know, the Russell Brands and the Russells generally will get this. But some of the ones that there are four pages of ones about me, which I find...
Exciting.
and counterintuitive in some ways, but yet I'm wise enough to go,
I'll just give an example of one of the ones from your pages. Dara Breen, if you would like to slap me in the face repeatedly with your erect cock, I wouldn't protest at all. I wonder how long could I do that for. I think they would start
before a small amount of protest occurred. Before they're like, this is great. Okay. You know? Okay, it's stopped ticking my boxes now.
We're in the supermarket. Come on, let's... My grandma's work, funeral.
You know, I'm like just twacking away. It would be a question of, because you know, I'm not a young man. Could I sustain that? Which of us would wilt first in that situation? Would it be their desire to see this fantasy come real? Or who would just get bored? I would presumably very quickly, because I'm probably not even attracted to this person. I'm really just doing it out of some weird sense of fan loyalty. For all the times I've said, no, I haven't got time to do a photograph now. I think, no, you get all of that now, right? You get me with a twack as long as you need it, honey, sir, whatever. Because that is the thing, because we don't know if it's straight or gay, we don't know anything at all. It'd be actually even more charming if it's gay in many ways. But it would be...
even more charming.
The charmingness level of I want to be twacked in the face with a red cock would go beyond the ten it's at into a whole new scale of charming.
Because if you became flaccid... at any point, then that wouldn't be within the terms of the contract.
No,
I'd be furious and go, this isn't erect.
I have a very limited amount of interest in being smacked in the face with your flaccid cock. For a start, you've had to shift positions now, and you're distinctly higher than you were, right? And really, you're really more nuzzling it. You're more draping it over my face, and then back again, and then just smearing-ish, like a child doing finger painting.
Another one. I'd quite like to do this one, vis-a-vis my earlier comments. I want to lick chocolate off of Dara's head. Yeah, it's not. I think it's just somebody who really likes Maltesers.
Yeah.
They're thinking, what would be the most like a gigantic Malteser I could get? Dara's head.
I'm one of the bottom men who shaves his head, though, still with like blade one, blade two. That would tickle the tongue after a while, I think. I don't think it would be as satisfying. If I had a natural cleft or dome in my head that they could pull the chocolate in and then scoop it out, that would be a surprise. You have more, I presume, there, do you? Because I have a personal favourite that I was going to mention, but go on. Do you have more?
My next one is, which I might get you to do just to make this person jealous. I want Dara to touch me with his giant hands.
I didn't do that to anyone, Joss.
Ah, the giant! Look, I'm dancing around on his palms! What was your favourite one? I didn't see it was there. Another one?
Which is a surprising theme of what's known as slash fic, which is porn written by fans where they put characters together, like it'll be Harry Potter shags. Somebody else from the Harry Potter universe. There's a lot. This one ties to a theme that appeared in a lot of the Mock the Week slash fic, of which there is quite a healthy amount. But this was one of those things. Was I would like to watch Darabin and Ed Byrne fuck each other, which is kind of weird because I'm very close friends with Ed, best man at each other's wedding and stuff like that. But for some reason, that crosses over into some sort of really weird kind of Irish on Irish thing.
Some people, one Irishman is not enough.
No, then this person didn't want either of us, I want to see the two. The weirder ones actually aren't me, obviously, although that is on the scale of weirdness, possibly on the spectrum of weirdness. The weird ones were ones the Harry Hill one, because I clicked on a lot of these. There's that one of just Harry Hill going, I would like him to do me in the suit or whatever, right? And one was, I'd like to be wanked by Stoofer the cat. And Stoofers are really, really rudimentary. Yeah. You gain purchase with Stoofer. It's not like, you know, monkey or it would be like rot emu. There's no one that said I'd like to be wanked by emu. And three of them were for John Le Mesurier of Dad's Army.
When he was alive or now?
Yes. Yes. Temporally in the world of the complex walled garden that is female sexuality and its many, many forms of expression, the guy from Dad's Army pushed the button for three separate women.
Right. I'm sure Stuart Lee would happily wank anyone off with Stoofer. Or the controller, more like the ventriloquist dummy guy he would like. But none of mine were very interesting. A lot of mine would get, you know, double act on double act sex.
Either
Collins and Herring or Lee and Herring.
Yeah.
But often of the... funnily enough, again, in the 90s, before the internet had really taken off, we did get sent a fanzine. There was a cartoon fanzine, which included a cartoon strip that was based on a true story of two teenage girls who had pretended to be me and Stu and then got off with each other. Which, you know, if you're going to have that, that's not a bad way to go, is it? So they'd snogged each other pretending to be me and Stu.
You and Stu?
Yeah.
That's really... That's
so it's
really
on how many
weird.
Levels?
Yeah,
of,
that's really strange.
Yeah.
That's
but really... we weren't invited along to watch. They were like 17, probably. It was the 90s. Different things were allowed back
crazy
then.
Times. They were crazy days, weren't they?
No one minded.
Crazy times, you know what I mean? Yeah. When the book gets open in our generation, Richard, there'll be some. Yeah. You're doing a lot of hiding in plain sight, I see, but nonetheless.
So
I have played that game, by the way. I'm sitting wondering who of our generation in 30 years' time.
Yes.
Yeah. Who will be most likely to be the nonce of this generation? You know, it whiles away in a tour. You know, when you're killing time on a long drive, Nottingham or whatever, you do go. Yeah. Oh, he's all, you know, I'm the, you know, the man of the palace or whatever. But I bet, I bet he does that a lot. I can't, obviously, for because
no,
you're
we can't
recording
really.
This. Right, okay,
we can't really just say those names.
No, we can't. Although, now it seems we both know names. Oh, please God, let nobody be done, because you'll all go, oh yeah, I remember. They knew even then. Right? And they ha 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 had a big laugh about it. Oh, they said, well, Jimmy Carr, paddle the fit, right? Paddle their ankle, and ho. Funniest thing in the world to them. And then we find out he's history's greatest monster.
But the police have got such a backlog, it's kind of reassuring to know if you are one of those people, you've got 30 years to go before you're going to get caught. So, you know, make sure you get them all in quickly.
But, you know, given some people are being arrested and it not be the case, right? So therefore, anyone could get the knock on the door.
Yeah.
There must be an entire generation, right? Sorry for the image of Bernie Clifton in the ostrich costume, just running forward and back, going, please not me, feel like whatever. You know, it just to be incorrectly mentioned in this kind of context would be hideous.
Yeah.
So just play off, you know, Bernie Clifton.
I have no idea why. You're suspicious of anyone basically who has a puppet of any kind, which I think is probably a good rule of thumb.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think if you got a room full of ventriloquists and puppeteers and threw a dart, you would probably hit a paedophile. That's not saying all of them are paedophiles. Of them just love puppets.
Yeah. We can specifically obviously exclude anyone who call their puppet either Nookie the Bear or Spit the Dog. Because neither of those names would have anything ulterior or strange about them in a sexual context that could be used anyway. Yeah. Go on, make the dog
but
spit.
But Rod Hull's actual act was just to grab small boys' penises with his hands. That was his act.
Surely with a line.
He had a bird. But that was it. I remember that watching bird, it. It was hilarious.
Rod
funny.
May be gone, but the bird is very litigious. I would roll back those comments.
You can't libel the dead. I know. Well, I knew
you
Rod.
You can't libel the dead.
I knew
you Rod. Can just say whatever you want. Oh, yeah.
Emu Mesu. Because Emu is still alive. But, you know, that was... I remember watching Summertime Special, and he would just... You know, that was a bit of harmless fun. It was the emus doing it. So the interesting thing about you, most people have lies on their Wikipedia page about them, I notice, when I go through, and I can usually spot them. Yeah. For you, I always do look at the imdb.com to find out the things you've done, and there are a lot of lies, I think, on your IMDb page, which is quite impressive. So according to IMDb, you have nicknames, which may be true. The Chortle Monkey, is that a real
No one has ever called
Dobby, is anyone ever called you Dobby? Dobby,
yeah,
I can see
do,
that.
Yeah, Ed, does, Ed calls him Dobby and his Mrs. Gummy Dobby, yeah.
Yeah, and penis sausage.
The penis sausage is because I resemble a penis sausage. It was. There is a small town in Lincoln called, in Ireland it would be pronounced Louth, but it's pronounced and Louth, I think, or Louth, or whatever. And the Olympic flame came through the village on its run down to the, you know, to the Olympics, obviously. Yeah. Rather than afterwards, when there'd be no interest at all. That flame is still gigging. We couldn't get to enough towns, so we're doing another 3 months of just looping around. So the flame was on the way to wherever he sent for the Olympic Games. Went to this village of Louth, and they're very famous for the production of sausages, apparently.
Right.
This is, you know, they're Lincoln sausages, they're all made in that small village. And the mayor wished to celebrate this, so she got a 6-foot-long sausage costume. And she got into the sausage costume and ran along the Olympic flame. Now, if you can imagine what a 6-foot-long sausage costume looks like, it's just a penis.
Yes.
It is just a penis running along the road beside the Olympic flame, while local photographers try to frame it as either remove it completely or really favour the penis with the Olympic flame, right? But it was noted that I looked like... It's difficult to do this non-visually, that yes. I had a certain physical resemblance to this penis sausage.
That seems unfair. Dobby, I can see.
Dobby,
that,
okay.
You know, a penis sausage. Imagine being slapped in the face by that.
That
would be quite something. Another thing that IMDb claims, you once helped...
No, I know the facts. It's not true, but I know.
They once helped the RSPCA rescue a wild goose from a tile shop.
Is there any truth
in that?
What the genesis of that is. And the thing that makes it brilliant, right? Not just that I would help the RSPCA in rescuing a goose, right?
There's a goose in a shop called Harrow Green.
I'm at home and I go, where's the goose? Yeah, I'll be there in 8 minutes. And I get into a really fast car, and 7 minutes later I get there, just as the RSP are turning up and they go, thank God you're here, right? Because we need you to do the beating, the sound, and then to lure him out. As well, you do that call, that goose call you do so well. What unique set of skills would I have in hunting a goose? But not just that, but the sheer specificity of it being not a shop, but a tile shop. Because I don't think I've ever been in a tile... I've been in places that also sell tiles, but I've never gone to Miles of Tiles. And the one time I would go to a tile shop is to say, I'm sorry, I'd love to help you, but there's a goose here. And I go, well, you're fucking lucky I arrived here, aren't you? Because I have a set of unique skills that allow me to track and trap geese. Oh. Call my friends in the RSPCA. I have no idea where it came from. I absolutely adore that. It's really good. I did once... my wife did this more than I did, rescued an angry parrot.
Right.
Yeah, and put it in the garage. Because she walked out one day from the house and there was a parrot... sitting on the fence of the house, right? And so she brought it in and put it in the garage and called the RSPCA.
That sounds to me like you once imprisoned a parrot. I don't think that's a rest. There was once a parrot outside, and then you took it and put it in your garage. You once kidnapped and imprisoned a parrot.
Yeah, she saw the opportunity. I said, finally, for years, I've had this net here and these doubloons. Now I can lure him in. But no, and we brought him in, and the parrot, then there's a photograph of the parrot sitting on top of an old bicycle, being really angry. And then the RSPCA came and said, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. So we get rid of parrots. Parrots aren't that pleasant to have.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no. It's an odd place to make up a lie and then hide it in the IMDb.com, which only really would get looked at by me.
Yeah. Those things are kind of useful because there's lies like that, and because there was a series of them at one stage on IMDb that would turn up in every interview. One that I was related to Michael Collins, the legendary Irish freedom fighter Michael Collins, which I'm not. That I fly Aer Lingus for free. Like literally, I just turn up and go, hey, 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 do this circle around the face thing. I think you know what I'm here for. And they go, no problem at all, darling. Why don't you get onto the conveyor belt and we'll just bring you down to your plane, right? And that I collect vintage Coca-Cola cans.
Right.
And it was always a mark of how well researched the interview was when these would appear, right? So they became like the die gun at the end of Speed, right? That you would mark an interview invisibly with this stuff and you would know how good an interview was because it would go poof, and it would be all over the questions and you'd be able to spot the genesis of the question and you go, yeah, I know you got that. I know exactly how much research you did for this interview because you'd be like, who's on? Click, click, click. Ah, goose. Nice. Let's go. Do your goose story. Go on, do your goose story. Yeah,
but if enough people repeat these stories, you might be able to go to Aer Lingus and just go, look, it's on the internet, I do travel for free.
Well known.
So we better let you off. There isn't room, we'll have to throw someone off. That's fine.
Michael Gambon used to invent things in interviews because he got bored doing interviews. Yes. And so he told people once that they said, how did you get to show business or how did you get to acting? He said, well, I used to be a dancer, but I fell into the opera pit and sprained my ankle and had to give up dancing and I couldn't bear, so I became an actor instead. And that he saw for years afterwards, he saw that repeated again. And that he used to carry around a photograph of Robert De Niro that he bought and signed to All the Best Bobby, and he would show it to people as, yeah, I'm really good friends, and he would take this photo out and it was there you go, and they go, oh, to Michael from Bobby, All the Best, and they go, oh wow, I didn't know you're friends with me. Like, you know the way you always carry out a signed photograph by your friends.
That was the thing that would make me suspicious. I might get you to sign me a photo, so I go, yeah, like, I am friends with them.
I am actually friends. I'll underline actually. I am actually a friend of his. P.S. If you need a goose moved, I'm the man.
Well, good. Well, I wouldn't ask you the rest of the questions I've got off Wikipedia, which is the only place that I look. You hold the world record. I think this is true.
Right.
I think I've heard this before. You hold the world record for performing the highest gig
Yeah, we did a gig for Comic Relief on a plane.
Aer Lingus?
No, but I didn't have to pay for the trip, which is as well, because presumably we just went up, turned around and came back down again.
Right.
As me, Jack Whitehall and John Richardson. And then they did the they got two singers to do a possibly higher one after that.
Yeah,
I know.
Fuckers.
But we're still
the highest comedy gig.
Yeah, exactly. Until some prick does a higher one, right? And it'll ruin it. But it doesn't work though. You know, because you're in a fucking tube, right? So bar the first three rows, no one can see anything. That's why they stand every 10 feet to indicate where the fire exits are. Because if you just took one person at the top, everyone at the back would die trying to find out where the fire exits were, right? So the gig was a bit shit. And then we had to walk down halfway down the plane and repeat some of the stuff again. They'd hear it. Like it was a poor idea, but it was a pleasant afternoon.
And were you selling duty free as you went down?
as the gig went on, people were trying to shift those fucking teddy bears dressed in pilots' outfits, and you're going, give it a break for 5 minutes, right, people.
And the show,
it's a perfect height though while doing that gig to slap somebody in the face with your cock. That is the best of it, to be honest. And so for some people, it was a dream come true the entire thing.
I was sad. If you're going to say, I got, when I went to Armenia recently, I was talking about this. We got to fly business class to Armenia, which is not that great. It's the worst. It was actually the worst seat to sit in the whole plane. 1A I sat in. And it just means every time anyone goes to the toilet, anyone comes through, I was just getting hit by people. A man actually fainted onto me. And nearly, I mean, I thought he died. I was on a plane. And this man, a man fell, hit my knee with his head and then fell to the floor and then was just dead. And I thought, well, what I was thinking was, oh no, we're going to have to land somewhere else and let him off. And I thought, well, if he's actually dead though,
he's not going
to
get undead,
they could just
quickly,
strap him into his seat till we get to him. But if they could rescue him, that's really going to inconvenience my day.
Yeah. So I take it while you're thinking this, you haven't leaned forward to see how he is.
Okay. He was right there on the floor. Just honestly, I genuinely thought he was dead. I thought that he's dead because he was just,
because that's what you should do. If somebody just appears to be dead, you should just sit and stare at them, and then work out how this affects your day.
That should be
your first instinct. Not just unclip and just like, you know, like just touch him on the side of the neck and see if there's blood pumping, or find a place, or push, you know, even in a desultory
kind of a
right, 1, 2, 3, you know, just kind of a, you know, I'm not saying that you should have gone clear like and ripped open his chest and then pumped hard. Don't you die on me, bitch. You should have. You've never given up anything in your life. Slapping him furiously, right?
The stewards were on him straight away. They were straight on him.
Fucking everything, wallet, watch, everything.
The good thing about going there was they were the stewards right there. That was the problem with sitting in that seat, because every time they came through the curtain, they'd hit me. So
yes,
I was trying to sleep. And then a bit later in the flight, if I felt like I might have been in some kind of candid camera thing. A bit later in the flight, they opened. It was videos on the plane. That's how bad a plane it was. They were videos on the plane, which slightly scared me, because I thought, if this plane is still so old that they're using videos,
right,
that this is quite scary. But the guy opened the thing, and the video, he dropped the video onto my computer. So it was like I was a magnet for disaster.
What happened to the guy who may have died?
I think you're missing the point.
Feeling your pain here.
My computer.
I'm sorry that the tracking on your movie was subpar, but did you alert to the stewards this? Because there's a brief pause, because you have to do 5 presses, then you pause. Would that have been the right time to go, this video is quite fuzzy and difficult to follow? Sorry, do another 5. And I'll let you come back to me like that. Did he wake up?
He was alright, he perked up.
He perked up, did he? Oh, he's there. That was a funny moment.
They lifted his legs up above his headset. So they lifted his legs up. He went. I mean, he was so lucky because he just fell. I mean, he just collapsed. If he hit the armrest, that would have killed him, because if his head had hit it.
Yes.
But he hit my knee instead, which was luckily quite
upholstered. You're stuffed. Yes. You're fat. What? Your knee.
So
your boneless knee. Right? You're lacking in all internal structure in knee. Bounced off this, right? Was cushioned by it, slid down there
onto
your leg,
floor.
and then got perked up by, was given the tickles by
they
the staff.
They lifted his legs up.
They lifted his legs up. That's fantastic. They stretched him.
Yeah.
So he actually woke up going, I'm fine. And my, you know, my Achilles was at the back of your legs. I forgot. The ones you stretch at the back of your leg. Yeah. Anyway.
So
he came out of it better in many ways. Yeah. Oh, well, then. And then they sort out your fucking video problem once they saved the
man. Dropped a video case onto... It was actually onto David Baddiel's computer.
I'm sorry, that's more serious.
So that's even worse.
Could have written... he was probably going to write a big novel at that stage.
David Baddiel's computer had quite a lot of... effluent on it. he made me read his script. He'd written a script and he said, will you read my script? And then he handed me the computer and there's quite a lot of, I think it was food, but
why does he spit food as he writes?
Guess,
is he?
Yeah.
And did you and then wipe
I
this
didn't
sounds...
I felt embarrassed though, you know, I didn't want to say anything, so I thought I'd wait till I was doing a podcast. You know what he's like though, David Baddiel as well.
He scans on me. He's
always wanking. He's always wanking.
Just like streaks.
Just like everything all over. It's disgusting.
Oh. Don't open the window.
Yes. So that's what we know about him. And you like doing stuff for charity because you have also, especially if it's in a tube-shaped method of transport, you've also been in a canoe on the Zambezi.
I was drinking that point, sorry. Yeah, I did. That's got broadcasts and stuff going on about that. The weird thing about it, not all the events that occurred on it, was that one of the things, it was for two quite noble causes. One was, there was one about vaccinations, greater vaccinations for people in Africa, and there was one about schools and getting more people to go to schools. So we had to record. I wasn't the one chosen to go and walk with them for 2 hours in the morning and have the full experience, right? It very quickly emerges in something like Comic Relief that you're either the kind of person who will do what they need you to do, right, and this isn't in a cynical way, but you're the kind of person who will emote publicly and give and be that steer for the viewers at home in terms of, oh my god, their actions, or you're a fucking cynical old prick like me, right, who, you know, good, let's get you almost dying clinging to a fucking tree, but we know you're not going to cry, right, because they kept asking questions about how has this changed the way you feel about your children, and you go, it hasn't changed the way I feel about, I was relatively fond of them beforehand and I remain so, right. At one stage the woman asked, and this is her job to ask these kind of questions, right, okay, you know, and what, you know, how has this changed the way you feel about the work of, or what have you learned about the work of Comic Relief, or the situation here in Africa. Oh, so it was more, what do you mean the situation here in Africa? I said, well, I've not learned anything because I've been watching Comic Relief for 24 years, so I wasn't unaware. And from, like, I'm a 41-year-old man, I'm not going, oh my God, there's so much poverty in this part of the third world. It's been such an eye-opener for me. No, you fucking broadcast it every 2 years. I've been paying attention. Surely I should be praised for having paid attention this till now and not arrived over and go, what the fuck is this about? I can't get Wi-Fi. And my picture is fuzzy. Are you using video? What kind of animals are you, for God? This is appalling. How we can't let this carry on, right? So there's a lot of that. And so add to the fact that I'm not naturally an emoter, right? I also had this idea, okay, that what we're dealing with was a long-term developmental goal, right? We're going to put more schools, work with the local church for there to be more schools so they don't have to walk for fucking 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day, and their school day isn't like literally 14 hours long, right? And that's a great thing, and it's a great thing for the economic development of a place like Zambia. Fabulous. But it's very difficult to sell that while there's a load of the kids who are left behind in the village running around like the most gorgeous, healthy, delighted children you've ever seen in your life, and going, these children soon will be able to go to school for the entire day. And a small child kicking a ball around, thrilled. And you kind of go, do you want me to sit down and tell the poor guy? Hey, good news, because we have arrived over all of this. All this fun is now going to end. None of this will happen again. Soon you can grind away at the chalk face for 40 years. And in the long run, that'll be a good thing. Aren't you happy about that? Aren't you thrilled just to see their little faces fall at the dark? Oh, come on. They were thrilled with the vaccinations and all that. But really, I'm quite happy hanging out with me ma in the village for the entire day. And now I got to walk. Oh, thanks. Only half an hour. Oh, you're a legend. Oh, great. Oh, I love what you're doing, man. Thanks for canoeing, right, you fat... prick. You're fucking wheezing your way down the river, patting yourself, managing to move canoe and pat yourself on the back in the one motion, right? Well, the bit that was really shattering, there's two of us per boat going down these things, right? Canoeing our way down, right? And going, oh my God, this has been really difficult. We've done 8 hours of this, like, whatever. And every so often ahead of us, right, they put a boat, right, with all of the luggage and camping gear and camera stuff and all that tied up. And one bloke, one local guy rowing that ahead of us, right? Casey glancing over his shoulder at us as we're going, oh, what I do for charity is incredible. The amount of effort I'm putting into this. Like, and the guy's going, would you fucking hurry up? Seriously, would you get a move on? Right? At this, like, yeah. So it was, yeah, it was idyllic. Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And you hurt your leg doing it?
I did. I scraped my leg off the bottom of a river because I fell out of the boat. There was a set of rapids that were too fast for us technically, and we had a big disaster and a lot of us went into the water and we got trapped in a tree. Genuinely could have died, right? Genuinely, we got trapped in a tree and we had to find a way out of it. Like, and I ended up clinging to a tree for 40 minutes, right? And I'll be honest, the edit was a bit. Fat Dara hasn't done enough training for this, has he? Right? Okay. As opposed to Dara's out of the water, but he spots a tree and he's going to swim to it and then he's going to stand there holding onto the tree because it gives him some measure of control. But that, you know, they need a kind of a narrative. I get it. It's quite broad strokes. Oh, but Dara's lost control of the boat. Yeah, fuckers, they all did, right? Listen, it was grand. But there was a point where you're clinging to a tree in the middle of Zambia going, yeah, this is possibly very dangerous, but we'll probably get a really huge surge in donations when the word gets out that I died.
Even more, if you were dead, in a way, it was selfish of you to survive. Live.
Yeah, I never thought I'd like that. I never thought how greedy I was not to have simply. Also, the thing is, there could have been a moment where, because we had head cameras on and we, you know, the little GoPro type things, and they were recording all of this stuff. So you got a very kind of point, you know, first person point of view with this, right? And there could have been a really good shot of my hand just failing to hold on anymore and then just slipping away and being spit off the water. But it has stopped recording and it's really irritating if I died off camera. That would have been the most irritating thing in the world.
It would be good if you died, but they kept it secret until the show was on, so it would be like a real... It'd be a real surprise for the viewers.
If they reveal it on the night. Yeah. They reveal it, of course, there's only five of you here. Why is that, Jack D? Well, Dara died on day two. But we kept it like some sort of Weekend at Bernie's thing. They have me strapped up in the boat. Oh, Dara seems to be enjoying the rapids.
The same as the guy on the plane, it would be very irritating. All the other celebrities would have had to go straight home if you were dead. Well, so they would be much better just to
It was only for a while, but then, you know, when Dara died, suddenly it became we had 1/6 fewer rowers, and now we had a corpse to bring around. So actually, it's been really, really difficult. Eventually, we had to give it to the guy with the luggage bag, and we strapped him to the top of that boat, and he happily rowed it all the way down to the Victoria Falls. Yeah.
So I better ask you some emergency questions, so people will be upset. We're having a good time without them, but, you know, let's ruin. In there. Young Ben Evans usually writes some questions, but he hasn't bothered today.
This is how old is young
he's
Ben?
He's like 11 years old. He's a lazy old cunt.
But he knew who was coming on.
He knew both. Well, he was. Yeah. He's always told. Sometimes he's not clear on who the people are. But okay. Today you say, no, these are the two names.
Oh, yeah, I know them. Yeah, no, they're both the work. Any questions?
No interest in writing any questions.
No, they've never done that. They've impinged on my life in any way.
So I'll ask you my own ones. Okay. This is a slightly new... This is a newish one. It's come from an old one. Would you rather have a tit that dispensed talcum powder? So it would actually be a boob, but every time you squeezed it, talcum powder...
Would a tiny little cloud? Like,
yeah. Yeah. And it would be limitless. You could have as much as you wanted. Yeah, every time it was touched, something would come out.
Obviously, you don't want every time somebody pushed up against it on the tube. Like,
that would happen. Like, that would happen.
It's a queuing for ice creams at the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful gift to have that, but there has to be a downside to it. It can't all be good. So,
okay. All right, you're right.
So you have to balance this up.
Dark and shade, I get it. Okay. So.
Or a finger that can travel through time, but just just your finger, so you... You could do, you know, you could, and you... It would still be attached to you, but the rest of you couldn't come through. So you'd be able to, You might be able to, I think you might just be able to see through the wormhole to see what's going on.
Yeah. It wouldn't just be a randomly like one of those games on Game for a Laugh where you put your hand into the darkened box and you don't know what you're touching.
Yeah.
Just your finger would go back an era or so, and then you go, oh, it's moist, or it's you know, kind of, you know, it's like, oh, is it a turtle's back? Is it, you know, is it a snake? Oh, yeah, you don't know.
No, you would know. I think you'd better choose the exact coordinates, so you could, it'd be very specific. You could go up any orifice you wanted.
I just mean that it'd be a lake or something. I didn't necessarily mean, as we say in Ireland, a gee. That's a word that we should popularise in this country, by the way. But there's a So I can see, like in Avengers Assemble, I'd see the gap and I could reach in.
Just your finger. So you wouldn't, and it would still be attached to your hand, so it couldn't be like the finger couldn't go flying around.
I get it.
Your fingers are quite, you're much longer than mine. Those big hands. Imagine those all over you.
Yeah.
So you could get a bit further. My finger's very short. So, but you know, you could dial in a phone number.
I could, we're going back a long way here, aren't we? can I pump one of those field kind of telephones?
Yes.
But hang on, how would I speak? The phone would ring.
And then, whoever had it, you could...
Hello? Dara, is that your finger dialing me from the future again?
If Hitler was on the phone, so you could go and ring a different number than he was expecting, and he would get through to, you know, somewhere
that's
else.
So hang on, that's not how phones work. I could go back to a telephone exchange from the 1930s and I could pull the thing out and put it through to a counselling service of some description. And Hitler, as he's about to announce his huge plan, would have somebody going, "You sure you want to go through with this?" And Hitler would go, "I don't know, no one's ever questioned it before." And say, "Well, I just don't think you've thought it through." And then why don't I just pull a trigger and shoot Hitler? And I'm trying to, if I got my finger there, I could just reach in behind one of his security thing, and then
you could do that
and disappear down my wormhole space. That's clearly better than a tish dispensing talcum powder.
Is it?
Oh, but it's a finger of infinite possibilities.
Imagine it.
But that's all it does, right? Whereas with the finger, I could go back and I could change the Ocado order to include talcum powder. I could go back to last week's online shop and then, oh, we have talcum. How did that come? Because I've changed time itself. And now we have as much talcum powder as we need.
All right, that's all we wanted to know.
The possibilities are endless. Being intimate with somebody, right? Yeah. You're being intimate with somebody and they go, "This is okay." And then they go, "Hang on, what's that? What are you doing? What are you doing?" And I said, "I don't know, I haven't decided to do it yet. Are you enjoying it? If you like it, I'll definitely do it. Okay, I'm doing it." Oh, that actually wraps around itself perfectly. There's no time paradox there at all when you're fingering an anonymous person while also... Yeah, that's great.
But you have to think about, if you go back in time and change something, will that change the whole universe and then...
It branches off. So it'll change it won't change the timeline you're in, my friend. It's a multiverse. It'll go off. It'll be fine.
Okay. As long as you're confident about
it. I'm confident about that.
This
isn't a looper where we just skim over the science here. This is properly thought out.
I'm pretty certain if you travelled in time that it's already happened and therefore it would already be there. You can't change anything, so you can't go back and kill Hitler because it hasn't happened.
There is an inequality that says you're going to travel forward in time.
Well, I'm doing that at the moment.
We're all doing that. Said Richard, I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. Yes. But your finger could only go forward in time.
That's not as good as it.
That's not as good. No. Now the tit with the talcum powder is back in play.
I think
your finger just randomly started appearing everywhere. You go, "Fuck me! Oh, that's that time I did that." Yeah.
I think you can go back, but if you have gone back, you've already done stuff. Because people say, "Oh, you go back and kill Hitler," but it's quite hard to kill Hitler. Like, loads of people tried to kill him who couldn't travel in time, who were there, and they didn't kill him. So it's not like going, "Oh, I go back and kill Hitler."
I think when people say, "I'm going to go back and kill Hitler," they mean like when he was like 9 or something. I'm going to go back and kill Hitler when he's surrounded by SS troops, right? I've got this one card I can play, which is time travel, and I'm going to fuck that up entirely by picking him. I'm going to place him outside of Berlin, right, in 1943. That's the ideal time to take on it. No, when he's like just
I don't think you'd be able to do it. So you'd go back and then you'd have grabbed the gun and there'd been a 9-year-old hitting you going, why are you doing this to me? I'm just drawing a picture. I can't do it. Well, he didn't, because he didn't get killed, so you didn't do it. So if you do go back...
So did my finger go back with the gun that was... I don't know how the finger the gun got there, right? And then my finger had second thoughts, yeah. Right? And the finger said, I can't do it. And I'm reasoning with my finger going, think of the many lives you'll save for the sake of this one small boy that you're going to shoot in the head with this gun, right?
Yeah.
And my finger couldn't do it.
No.
Oh, bad finger. I'm so bad much finger. More in favour. But that's... then I reached my tit out and puffed him in the face repeatedly. With talking
that
about
that can't
it.
Go through time, Dara. You're bending the rules now. I'll ask you another question. I think I have to ask you this one because it's just interesting and a logistical point of view. We have talked quite a lot about penises. But have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Of course, I've never.
Cheer.
Yes, because that is the standard.
It is a standard question.
Yes, yeah. The of course not is the obvious answer. Mm. I've never have done that, and yet there is a sense memory that something, you know, I for some reason it doesn't feel unfamiliar to me as a concept. Right, that something has happened, but I buried it deep down. I must have attempted. I'm clearly, you know, the worst. The tantalising reality is, you get older, you get less limber anyway. So it moves further. So even if you did realise, my God, I would really like to do that, you just haven't the bendiness in you to get it done, which is the worst of it.
The thing with you is, you have so many fans wanting to do it for you anyway. What's the point?
Why would I possibly even do that?
When you've got people just queuing up to have it slapped in their face, why put it in your own? That's my question to you.
I don't think people are literally queuing up to get that done. I think that's overstating somebody on an anonymous Tumblr being quite dark. Like, whatever. Literally, there isn't at all times like one of those poles and a velvet rope and a line of people, two or three back checking their watches going, am I going to get a chance to do this because I got to get out of here? I've only got an hour for lunch, right? So are you planning to be long? Can I just go forward, get one thwack and then get out of here because, you know.
I think there are a lot of people. So I'm interested. I don't really watch this programme, so I don't know much about it, but you are in it. I'm just kind of in the Three Men in a Boat programme you do with Rory McGrath.
They're no longer doing them anymore. Rory and
Griff Rhys-Jones.
Yep.
How did that start up as an idea? Why was the decision to put the three of you? Was it just someone said, we need three men? Show. Oh, they're three men. They'll do. Or was there any reason why the three of you were put together?
That's how these things get made.
But you weren't really known before.
It wasn't originally... The only actually vaguely bit true about that is it's supposed to be Bill Bailey instead of Griff Rhys-Jones.
All right. That would have been better.
Except that Griff actually owns a boat and it would have been a very short and very uneventful trip. So it had been Bill. But Bill, I think, was for family reasons, couldn't do it. So Griff came in at the last reason because he had a boat. And then the magic was made. And the thing is, the first thing we did was like 2004, and it was really irritating me because it was these middle-aged men on their jaunt, and I was 33 at the time. I wasn't even married, I had no children. These guys had kids. All the conversation was about, oh, well, such and such is just finishing his degree here. And then they're going, I am not of a generation. I watched your stuff when I was a kid, and yet I am bundled in with you for this. Like, with all the those menopausal men seeking some return to their youth. I'm fucking 33. It was very enjoyable. They're very silly shows. You'd enjoy them. They're very relaxing Sunday afternoon.
Were you ever worried Rory McGrath was going to have a little pop at you?
This is all before that.
He's lovely, Rory.
He is actually lovely. Yeah, he is. He's a genuinely lovely man.
Yeah. Didn't have a few drinks, and so.
Yes.
I'm an evil man. Oh, this is one. Is this true that your ridiculous name, which is every time I write your name, I have to. Sorry, that's racially insensitive.
A little bit,
culturally
awkward.
It's
ridiculous
name.
Yeah,
O'Brien.
O'Brien. It's the original form of O'Brien. It's
yeah.
Not so random or strange that.
According to Wikipedia.
Your
dad just changed the spelling. They were called O'Brien.
We changed it to the original Irish spelling. He didn't just randomly pick these letters.
Well, that means I can just change my name to the original Viking Haring.
Then do.
I don't want to. Can't go back. Can't go, no, now I'm all Viking again. Can't do
okay.
that.
Okay, but you can go. I'm Irish. I'm in the Viking nation. If you wanted to, I wouldn't hold it against you.
I do hold it against you.
Richard Harding. Really, is it a Viking
name? I think it's a Viking name, yeah. That's what I've you know, I haven't really researched it that far.
No, clearly
someone just
not.
Someone just said, I think that's a Viking name. So
should
that match
an old fisherman's name? I'm not being silly, but is that not an obvious derivation of your name? Like Smith used to be a blacksmith. Herring probably sold herring at a market.
Very poor personal hygiene, I think, was...
Possibly. Harding. Yeah.
Sorry, can I...
So it's the Irish language for it. So of my ridiculous name, it's the Irish language.
But it's difficult to spell because it's
Wuzum. I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I'll change my name to Duh. Just the letter D, and maybe can I have another letter? Or is that making it more complex?
I would do is put a T in the middle of it, so it's Dara O'Britain.
Oh.
And then... let's see how you like your ancient Irish...
What, the dark burden of history?
Yes.
You've done very, very well not to mention it. But yeah.
All right, there's another slightly controversial subject there that
I won't go into now.
I feel like I've upset.
It's not controversial. People in Ireland can't spell the name either.
No. Well, you've got the. I've been picketed in my shows for being for having religious content and anti-religious content. You've been picketed about greyhounds.
Yes.
Your show.
We owned a greyhound briefly, a group of us in Dublin, and then we featured a greyhound on Three Men and a Boat, and then a lot of people involved in greyhounds get a lot of people campaign against greyhounds because they regard it as a very cruel industry, which it actually may well be, but we were kind of just having a nice time with it, and it was a lovely dog, right, okay, but then people would turn up, there was a particular tour that every time I played, particularly actually there was a circle of northern venues, people would turn up with greyhounds at the backstage, not like lots of them, it wasn't like
they turned up with greyhounds.
Well,
that's cruel to the
greyhounds. It's a late night, maybe. I don't think it's that so great. The greyhound didn't have to sit through the show, right? It wasn't like the greyhound's dozing off, going, I'm really not into this. I'm more of a sketch man. What are we doing? What's he talking about now, right? But they would turn him out with the greyhound. And it was actually kind of like, because they'd be like, angry. And I'm going, yeah. And just stroking the dog, and the dog and I are getting on great. And going, he's a lovely dog. Angry. You should come out. And you should contend. And I went, I'm not doing that. And it's gone. But as it turns out, we're not heavily involved in it anymore. Nice. One of the things that was almost a scandal, but didn't.
Right.
Yeah, ended up being one. I did get people.
I did Christ on a Bike about five places, and Glasgow was the worst one actually, where there was about 40 people from quite an unpleasant church of. Well, yeah. It is. It's just an anti-gay, really extreme. I can't remember what they're called now, but I wouldn't give them the oxygen of publicity. Even looking, but there was loads of them out there. But I went out to meet them all because I thought, this would be a good DVD extra. So I went out with a little and talked to them all. But then it kind of got quite heated. But it was all right. The other ones were in kind of East Anglia, where everyone was much more reasonable. In fact, Paisley's son. Kyle Paisley runs a church in Lowestoft or somewhere, and they all came out and I just had quite a nice chat, and an old lady gave me a kiss, which was the most action I got on that tour. But it was like, you know, it's going to come and say, well, why don't you come, please come in and see the show, and then we can discuss whether it is anti-Jesus or not. And we don't need to see the show to know we hate it.
A lot of people get very angry about that stance. I don't need to see this. There's a famous quote by an anthropologist, and I don't need to see pornography to know what it is, right? And you say, no, you should come in. But actually, you know, well, of course they would have fucking hated it at the show. This is why you go, no, you cannot judge until... But they pretty accurately prejudged. There's no element of them suddenly going, oh wait, this is actually pro-Christ. This show has you're absolutely right, I'm sorry, I completely misread the press release. This show is one of the most profoundly religious shows that I've ever seen. No, of course they're right, they would have hated it, would second it, right? So it's why taunt them by going, no, come into the show. You don't know it. I get occasionally get people given out because I do jokes about Christians and I don't do jokes about Muslims. I had a routine about. We all get this, I think. We all get something. And I had a routine about it, going the reason I'm judging Muslims is because A, I don't know a fucking thing about Muslims, and I pointed out and B, neither do you. Right? and it's a fairly accurate observation that we don't have the same cultural knowledge of it that we do about Christianity. Right? It wasn't basically thumped into us like it was for me for my entire school career and all of my bringing up. So therefore, I know every bit of minutiae about the fucking thing, and they're very commonly known. And that's why it's pointless. You get two weird responses to that. First is, well, you should learn something, and you're going, No, that doesn't. Then I would know minutiae about the Muslim faith, but the audience still wouldn't. So it's fucking pointless going on about. Then you're just fucking just banging on about stuff you know and they don't, right? And then people are going, well, because you're not brave enough. And then you're going, how weird is that? That you need me, you're desperate for me to write you anti-Muslim material. How fucked up is that? That is your one desire. That rather than me talking about my own upbringing, essentially, in the culture I'm in, you really fucking live it. That I won't give you some anti-Muslim jokes to do, right, at age. And I find that really fucked up as an attitude. Yeah.
And, you know, the Christians have quite a good record of being quite unpleasant as well.
Yeah,
especially historically. Yeah. I got death threats over, you know, from Christians about this, about the show they hadn't seen. So it's not like it's not that you're not scared to do it. It is that you don't know enough about it. But, if they would have been happy if I'd been killed.
It doesn't have the cultural resonance. And it's one of the things that people go on about, oh, Sharia law, and all that. Like, we know a fucking thing. Like, it has any genuine cultural heft in this country. People going on about the creepiness. No, it doesn't. We do, pray five times a day. There'll be literally the extent of it. Pray five times a day in a certain direction, you know, it's called the Quran. And the name of the, and they know the name of the prophet, maybe, and that's it. I even heard a fact about how they have a different calendar, because obviously Muhammad was a different time to Jesus, right? And even that you have to fucking explain to an audience. And they go, oh yeah, I suppose so, right? You kind of go, yes, this is why you can't fucking go and do a specific. I think the example I had was that you can't walk on stage and go, oh, what's up with the Muslims, that big golden horse that comes over the hill every year and gives the kids presents, what the fuck is that all about, right? As a hypothetical. And then the other time it was any Muslim knows going, what fucking golden horse? what the fuck are you talking about? Anyway, so yeah, that got irritating. That gets irritating, that. Yeah. I had a guy who kept setting up other Twitter accounts to abuse me, and I'd block him off, and he'd come back again and he'd abuse me. Like, just, yeah, for the hell of it. That was an afternoon. Anyway, go on.
Sorry about that, it was me. I was on The Apprentice, You're Fired for one episode. Yeah. Not going to have me back?
I'd happily have you back. I thought you were great. I thought you were going, I don't book the show. I didn't know there was an issue. I didn't know you were sitting there waiting for the phone to ring. I'm sorry.
I thought I did well. The executive producer gave me a lift home. I thought, that's
creepy.
Is that why?
And they roll down the window when you're at the bus stop and go, this is nice. The car is dry and warm. Come in. Come on. You want to go on the show again, don't you? Yeah, you want to go on the show. Come on, get in here. Get into the car. Yeah.
If you meet the Apprentice contestants now, do you remember them all? Have you ever bumped into them? Go, hey, no, it's me, and then you go, yeah. Because it's been quite a lot, hasn't it?
And the whole you never believe what I'm doing now. And you're kind of going, shit, what you're doing now? To be honest, tell me, and I'll nod and smile. I have a fucking, and you kind of want to go. You're lovely people. Some of them are genuinely very nice, but generally, in totality, you know, you could 16 and pass through the doors, and another series, another 16. I have a glass of scotch and a shower, and I never fucking think about them again. Way to view it, right? Except if I open Zoo, and one of them is in Zoo, and then you go, don't do that. And I just get that would make me profoundly sad when any of them do Zoo or not. Yeah. So that makes me depressed. So anyway,
but you still get Zoo though. So you just buy it on the off chance.
Well, when it arrives, when the postman delivers my Zoo and nuts that I get delivered every week, and I tear open and I go, wait, no, this isn't a professional model. This is that woman I've met. I can't work with this. I've met this person. This is just pointless. Dear editor of Zoo or Nuts,
do you think Alan Sugar? He kind of tweets. Football scores sometimes.
Yes, I know. And you retweet it out of context, but it makes no sense.
Have you ever just had a word with him about why he tweets?
I talk to him once or twice a year, and it's kind of slightly, kind of like, I don't go, hey, do you know what's funny? Sir Lord Alan Sugar, whatever the title is at the moment. Oh my lord, we get to use the fly.
Yeah, there's a date, it's really near you. It properly electrocutes people, so. This could be worse than the Zambezi.
Do you know what would have been very handy? On that fucking plane to Armenia, if you'd had that. If you'd gone to the nice person and gone, okay, I know you're pressing and pushing, but I have just the thing, and then pulled out.
It's on the list.
Executioner fly swat.
It's on the list of things you're not allowed to take on a plane. I guess if you put it in a tennis racket cover,
it could be quite
a handy thing to take. I think that might get through airport security. They would just think that was a...
A tennis racket. They would.
With a cover on.
Yeah, with the executioner written on it.
But if they opened up and had a look, it would be a problem.
Yeah, but it's also half the size of a tennis racket. What tournament do they think you're playing?
be a mini. It's for very good tennis players.
See, you're right. People like Murray, these kind of bluffers, have massive things, right?
I don't need that.
You don't need. You've got a tiny sweet spot in the middle of that, like, Did that electrocute you when you tapped it there?
Because you've got to press that button at the same time. And you're not meant to put it near electronic equipment, so. Probably if I'd done it on my hand with my mic in my hand, I think that might have been the end.
If that had happened, I would have sat here and I would have reflected on the how good the view was. I would have gone, what's this going to do for the rest of my day? Because I had a schedule to get to. We have to park this plane early just because you died.
You could interview Ross for the second one. He'd be happy to do that. That would be nice. Got to keep it going. Well, we're going to have to finish, really, because I'll ask you, do you have any unusual phobias?
No, I don't. Okay. I have really natural fears of things that would kill me.
Are you sure that you don't have an unusual phobia? Because often people say no and then they suddenly go, oh yes, I'm afraid of cheese. And it would be brilliant if you had something.
Yeah.
Because there aren't any other questions.
But I don't. Number 13, I'm not particularly superstitious. Okay. No.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
This will probably get us to the end. All right. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot? I mean, if you had...
You think there's an anecdote that'll bring this baby home? You think that I've got to 20 years of a comedy career and never known the right time to tell the Bigfoot story? That I've been sitting talking to agents for years. Now, surely this is the show. And they go, no, we're just waiting for exactly the right moment to unleash this story, right? You've got the right... Maybe wait till you've done a couple of years of science broadcasting. Then suddenly, on Stargazing, stop the show and go, Brian Cox, that's all very interesting. But I want to talk tonight about the Bigfoot, right? Many of you science people will be very sceptical. I myself would have been very sceptical of it. But then there was that day I went walking in the Appalachian Mountains and something appeared and it was not a bear. Don't tell me this was a bear on its 2 feet laughing at me. I don't think so. You think I'm sitting on a piece of gold like that for just such an occasion such as this?
It'd be good if you were.
It'd be handy, wouldn't it? If handy if I could produce now grainy video evidence that I, for years, have not had the confidence to present to people. But finally now, among friends, I feel this is... I feel that I've the trust earned at this point in my career. How fabulous, how fucking David Icke-like would my descent be if this point of my career I suddenly started going, no, Jonathan Ross, I don't want to talk about my upcoming projects. Look again at the footage, right? And explain to me how that gate is the gate of an average Ursa Majoris Barnes, the brown bear, which is not even endemic to the region we're talking about, Jonathan. No, John, I will not move down the couch for Simon Cowell. This is important. We have been fed lies, sheeple. We have been fed lies about this. Take the wool from your eyes. They walk among us like BFGs. They are here at night. I am completely serious about this. Don't go to a commercial break.
I can edit this in such a way that it will now work. So it's... Ladies and gentlemen, big round for Darren Freeman. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dara O'Brien. Music was by Pest. Thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guard. Thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide, all the staff at the Leicester Square Theatre, and Chris Evans. You know which one it is by now. It was produced by Dave Cribb and Ben Walker. It is a Fuzz, Go Faster, Stripe and Sky Potato production. If you have enjoyed listening to Rahel Estepa, then there's lots of ways you can pay us back. You can either get the video podcasts at gofasterstripe.com, where you can also buy all my DVDs and most of my books. Anything like that would be a fantastic help. You can also get T-shirts of the show from richardherring.cottoncart.com. Coming up as well are some We're All Going to Die dates. There's one in Peterborough on the 4th of November, which you can find out about the tour at richardherring.com/WAGTD. Wagdada. And I don't know, that's probably it for the moment. So thank you for listening. And, we'll tell you what else we're doing. We're doing Meaning of Life, which is a new show for the internet at the Leicester Square Theatre. The first recording is on November the 17th. It's only £10 to come along. So if you want to come along and watch that be recorded, that would be terrific. Thank you very much. See you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.